Hello and welcome. I'm Simon.
I'm Alexander.
And I'm Haney.
We are Needup in Tech, covering the latest from the IT industry with a specific focus on Microsoft and how to get actual value from technology. This is episode 311, the second of our two special episodes on Microsoft Build. You will be able to find this and our previous episodes on needupintech.com, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and probably all the rest of the podcasting platforms. To the best of our knowledge, no other video platforms are available at this point in time. Today, we are covering the rest of our top picks from Microsoft Build, and we'll be talking about things like SQL Server, Azure AI Foundry, and lots of other updates on the data side, the AI side, the developer side, and possibly some security.
Cool stuff.
And because Simon ate up all my time in the previous episode, I get to start and go as long as I need to. And we'll see if Alexander and Simon have time left after that.
Fair
enough.
Well, I will be nice. I actually won't be that evil. But I will continue with some Azure AI Foundry related updates that were announced at Build. And one of them is Foundry Agent Service, or sometimes it's called Azure AI Agent Service. And personally, I get a lot of confusion around this because, well, now we have the Azure AI Foundry. It used to be called something else that I now cannot remember. And then it got renamed into Azure AI Foundry. And then we have also Azure AI Foundry Agent Service. And it seems like it is a little bit a part of the old Azure Foundry service, but still it's talked about also separately. So for me, in my mind, it's a little bit difficult to make sense that what actually provides which capability in Foundry. So for me, it seems like the Foundry is the whole umbrella of things that you need to build agents. So it's the model selection, it's the whole development process, operationalization, monitoring, things like that. And it seems like Foundry is gonna kind of encompass all of that. And then Azure AI Foundry Agent Service, that is the correct name, actually, with all of those words put together. And sometimes you find the name with some words missing in between. Don't be confused. That has now become generally available. And this is really the part that provides the capability for agents specifically. So, of course, you still need to choose the model that you use and things like that. So it very, very tightly couples with the whole Azure AI Foundry service itself, but this is the part that enables the agents part. And as Simon was telling in the previous episode, here we also have these similar patterns coming up that Simon was mentioning. So multi-agent workflows, how do you build systems that has this multi-agent pattern? And also on the other hand, maybe even more simple, is how do you have these connected agents? So you have these point-to-point interactions between them. And this is also what the Foundry Agent Service is bringing to the table as well.
So is that the would you say that that's the orchestration tool in Azure? Would that be a good way of describing it? Or is it more the...
I would say it's more the
toolbox you need to build the agent.
Yes, that's more what I would say. So it's kind of the specifications of the agent itself. So for example, well, you might also need some kind of integrations for your agent. So you could need a logic app integration, for example.
Yeah.
And you might need some data. You might need some data from your SharePoint, or you might have some third-party tools that you might need. But the line between Foundry and agent service within Foundry is a little vague for me, so maybe somebody can explain that to us a little better than I was able to. If you do, let me know, and maybe we can have you on.
Yes.
Of course, as a data person, I'm also always really excited when there are these data integrations coming into these AI capabilities, because I think we've been in a time where we just make very pointed agent solutions or LLM solutions. And it's kind of like if we're building these data platforms and putting effort into having high quality data, why don't we then leverage that data in some way? So to Azure AI Foundry, there has been this connector to Azure Databricks that was announced at Build. And I really like Azure Databricks. And I think it's cool that they now have a connector for it. And it has a connectivity so that you are able to connect your data, but then also you are able to connect to the Azure Databricks AI Genie thing that they have within the service. So it kind of just calls that and leverages that to fetch the results for you. And I have to say the AI capabilities in Databricks work quite well. So that's really
for cool. For what? What do you use it for?
Well, the Genie gives you capabilities to, for example, query your data, get insights from your data. Similar as the Fabric Data Agents. It's a very similar concept, actually, now that I put the words together. They have a very, very similar approach to it. Yeah. And that's what I talked about in the previous episode.
So let me just ask you this. Do you see a use for the whole talk to your data?
I do already see people doing it.
Absolutely. But that really doesn't answer the question.
I know. I was buying time.
Is it a novelty or is it really useful?
It can be useful if you have good data, like quality data.
True.
But this is also where I get confused. Like, at what level should you build your agents or other AI solutions? Because if you look at like how Microsoft wants you to use like Copilot Studio, that's almost low code applications to something else. And no regular user in their right mind would connect that straight to a data source. Mm-hmm. That's more what I'm getting at. Like, I definitely see, I think that's the holy grail of data in the end, to be able to speak to your data. Mm-hmm. Question is, when should you speak to it? When should you do a visual?
Yeah.
When should you move this data into other specific applications and build an agent that talks to that application, which might be Fabric or something else?
Yeah.
So this is where I think we are still seeing a little bit of, let's build everything.
True.
And see what sticks.
Yeah.
See what we figure out. We'll try different ways of getting to the data, but we really don't know what we need yet.
Yeah. For Azure Databricks, I see that maybe for some users, they might not be using Databricks every day, or it feels too technical. And of course, I think there's still a place for having your reports off of your data and those needs. But then I think where this potentially could come into the picture is if you have users that don't directly work with Databricks, but you have your business data there and you want to have that available for them through an agent, then that could be the potential use case, in my opinion. But it shouldn't necessarily be just for like, hey, experiment, figure out what you find. But it should be like, there's actually these recurring questions that these users are trying to get from your data. And right now they don't have a way to do it. That's where I see this fitting in.
I have a lot of thoughts on this and I really don't know what foot to stand on, because if we take the example of self-service BI, it was mm-hmm. all the rage. It's still hyped, mm-hmm. but I have yet to see, honestly, anyone implement self-service BI and gain anything from it. Because the idea that data should be open and free and available to everyone to go poke at, it's great. But who cares? Who does it? If you need to have the information, it should be surfaced as a report that you can quickly and easily consume, because the data doesn't matter. It's a tool to do your work.
Yeah.
And yes, there are people who has as their sole work to be data analysts. But do they want to talk to the data that way? I don't know. So it still feels immature. It still feels like we have a solution to a problem that we have yet to define.
Yeah.
Could this be one thing that unlocks insight in the future? Yes, I'm sure it is. But at the moment, it's a bit... Huh?
Yeah, I would love to follow up on this because... me as a non-data person, I think that this is what I would like to see. Because the upside of this is that I can ask a question, whatever I need it, in my context, all of these things. When you do a report, even self-service BI, you need to know how to use whatever you have on the screen.
Sure.
You can't, but that's also where I see why would you have these agents connected to Databricks and not to Power BI? Which, in my opinion, would make more sense. Where you have done a great job of doing the, or Fabric, I don't care. You have done a great job in ensuring data quality. You have connected data sources into a context of, let's say, a report. And then you add an agent to that report to query the data. Ask about the visual, all of these things. I'm getting upset now, I feel. But like, for me, it makes sense. But I would like to ask, get my what I need from the data,
yeah,
and not being forced to go through someone who makes a great report. But that's good if you want to reach a lot of people. Then it's great.
And I think you're absolutely on to something. We are not really seeing the use cases. And to be fair, one, people have not been really good at putting into words why mm-hmm. this is useful. So mm-hmm. if we can absolutely find someone to talk to that is not just chock full of marketing BS, I'd be more than happy to have them on.
Yeah.
So if you're one of those people, let us know, because we'd love to have this kind of conversation for sure.
Definitely.
But you have more stuff to share here.
Yes. We've covered AI Foundry to an extent. There was a lot of more nitty-gritty things that came out in build. So if you're interested, go back to the Book of News. You can find all the relevant links there and navigate to the stuff that really intrigues you. So another really interesting thing that actually came into Fabric that I was like intrigued to see there is that there is now a digital twin builder in Microsoft Fabric. Or a preview. So this will be a capability within the real-time intelligence in Microsoft Fabric. I see your faces. What are your initial reactions?
So I think, yeah, go ahead.
Digital twin first came up in the realm of IoT several years ago, where you created a digital twin of a building, for instance, and then used that to do simulations and stuff. Is that still what we're talking about?
Yes, because you need a way to represent the digital information that you get to a device into what does it actually mean in terms of like, hey, this signal means temperature, this signal means XYZ, and so forth. So that's essentially what a digital twin does. In full context.
It gives context.
Yeah, in full context, it could be a full building that you represent with it. And yes, that is what we're talking about.
I need to find that build keynote where they showed the hologram the first time, where everyone had HoloLenses, and that was what Power BI were supposed to be, a 3D model of a building. And then if I poke this thing within the building. What happens?
Yep.
And I'm excited.
Like that, there was, it was built in Israel, but it was never released. So you could have a Power BI report in space. So mm-hmm. you can, for instance, walk up to an elevator and with your HoloLens on, and you could see stats off that elevator and troubleshoot the elevator mm-hmm. because you could look at the data from the elevator. Really cool, but it never got in everywhere.
The demos I've seen of it is not maybe quite that flashy of 3D and stuff, but, you know, essentially you just need the representations, digital representations of your physical devices. And I find this an interesting direction of development in real-time intelligence. So that's the side of Fabric that deals with, hey, you have a stream of data coming in, either a continuous stream or more a irregular event-based stream even. It doesn't have to be exactly, you know, real-time necessarily, mm-hmm. but it handles with actually turning your streams into data assets as well, which is maybe a little bit of a different angle that other platforms take, that I think there's something there and really excited to see where that goes. But now we clearly see that there seems to be a lot of these IoT capabilities. Well, not a lot, but some IoT capabilities are clearly going to start coming into real-time intelligence. So it's not just that, hey, you have Fabric, which is the landing zone maybe for your IoT data as a stream, that you just ingest that data and then do something with it in Fabric, but you possibly are starting to have some IoT capabilities within Fabric as well. And, you know, it's a little like, oh, that's cool, but at the same time, a little bit like, oh, this is like everything coming into Fabric. That we're bringing all the, you know, Azure pieces we had for creating an IoT platform. Are they all going to end up in Fabric as well? That's my question. Really like, what?
Have you seen The Art of M.C. Escher?
No.
I think you have. It's these stairwells that, as you follow them with your eyes,
they
turn out to be the same. That's how I see Fabric and Azure. Mm-hmm. Like, it's reinventing itself mm-hmm. and not necessarily in a good way, but that's an aside.
Yes.
Are you done?
Yeah. Just maybe as the last point, of course, Fabric is kind of bringing in the twist of this is you democratizing and scaling your digital twins.
Oh,
that's the wording from the Build Book of News. And so that you have, then they become more available also for, you know, decision makers. So interesting venue of development. And, you know, IoT projects aren't easy. So if they're actually able to make it easier, it's cool, but we'll see how it plays in real life. Now I'm done.
And this is also, and that is also a perfect combination of these natural language questions using the AIs. Because if I can tell Fabric, create a digital twin and ask things about, if I change this, what happens to that? Mm. That is perfect. And that is something that would be super complicated to do if you couldn't use the agents in all of these combinations.
And I ate up our time this time, but you two happened to hop in a lot, so.
Exactly.
It's your fault.
So I'm gonna talk about something that I think really flew under the radar, and I think that is a sad thing, because everybody other cat is busy talking about Fabric, and well, essentially, everyone at Microsoft that did not work with Fabric now find themselves working with Fabric. One thing that we've just got a preview of is SQL Server 2025. And wow, there are so many things that I could talk about in this release that clearly shows that this ancient thing is still extremely relevant.
Yeah.
So one of the really cool things in SQL Server is What does it do? Well, it's a relational database, right? It's designed for relational data. So we avoid stuff like XML and JSON and such like the plague. We hate those things because they do not fit into a normalized schema. But it turns out that the world doesn't really care. And a lot of IoT data, for instance, gets sent as JSON. And JSON really makes sense. Everybody hates XML, rightly so, but JSON makes sense. And PostgreSQL has had for quite some time a really powerful JSON data type. So you can index and query JSON very, very quickly, which is a pain in the posterior in SQL Server until 2025, because they now have mechanisms and so a JSON data type, a JSON index, and suddenly you can now store semi-structured data in the database and do so at a pretty effing high speed. So we're no longer either having to go to PostgreSQL or to Cosmos, but now we get this capability in SQL Server as well. The other day, there was a shout out from Glenn Berry. He's been an MVP since, well, I was in diapers probably. He's been working with SQL Server forever, and he always concentrates on the really special edge cases when it comes to super high performant CPUs and disks and stuff. And he wanted to verify, are these numbers really possible? Because the backup compression in SQL Server 2025 was just through the roof. It wasn't even funny how fast it was at backing up. So also very unexpected, but extremely interesting as your data volumes grow. And then there's something that literally breaks my mind. And this is where I'm very happy that we have a mathematician on board. So we now have vector functions and vector indices in SQL Server, also vector data types. I can do a really piss poor job of explaining what a vector is. Can you do a better job, Haney?
What was the definition you started with, the vector in array?
Sort of kind of an array of numbers.
Yeah, that's not wrong. And in mathematics, in mathematics, it is also a list of numbers, an array of numbers. And
it's two-dimensional array of numbers, right?
Yeah. Well, let's leave that out of the conversation today. But a vector can also be represented as a line in a coordinate system. So it has something called a magnitude. So like how represented by how long it is, and it has a direction. And all those numbers in the array represent that. They help to show what is that direction and that magnitude. Of course, then we can have all kinds of coordinate systems, but we're not going to get into that. And how does it link to this SQL Server update is kind of the bridge from that to the implementations in AI. So it's possible for us, for example, to represent words as vectors. So it can, for example, be used to kind of give number representations to different parts of a sentence, of a word, etc., and represent them in this numerical format. And then when we have these vector engines, we're able to see how close are they to that specific set of, for example, things in your query that you ask. I think the last part got a little convoluted, but I see you nodding, so maybe you caught on to that.
I was thinking a completely different thing, and I might be absolutely completely off track here, but what I was thinking were, okay, if you can represent a word or something like that using a vector, and you said that a vector have a magnitude and a direction, would that be useful in terms of, okay, if I have this word, I should move, doing air, I love to be able to do air quotes, and the viewers on YouTube can actually see it. move in this direction with your reasoning, would that be a super simplistic way of explaining the value, or is it completely wrong?
It's not completely off, but it's almost like you have this vector and then you are checking how close is the point to that vector. That would be maybe one way to phrase
okay.
it.
So
you're not completely
this
off.
This is a very powerful fuzzy matching, essentially.
Yeah. And then...
That was a very good explanation.
Yeah. And then within the AI field, you could also represent data in vectors, so images, audio, etc. So it's also used in that context as well.
And also you can do math on the entire vector.
Yes.
You can multiply two vectors, for instance, instead of multiplying each and every element.
Or add two vectors together.
Yes, and we're back to my brain breaks. But I did look at this when I was looking into the mathematics of some of the machine learning stuff. So clearly it works, and clearly this is useful for stuff.
For stuff.
Another thing, or stuff. Another thing that I really find interesting, and this sort of segues back to what you were talking about, the real-time and event stuff, it's possible to stream changes in a SQL database straight into Event Hub. So pretty much taking the change data capture, the mechanism that we've had for ages and ages. So whenever something happens in a SQL server, I can just post that to Event Hub and really decouple the database from and getting an event handler automatically. Really excited to see what we can do with that. Something that we've been talking about since, late 90s, we've always wanted a developer edition that was not enterprise edition, because we used to have web standard and enterprise editions for SQL Server, and then developer edition, which was free. You just couldn't use it for production, but that was enterprise edition. So if you had a customer, for instance, that run standard, you would not have the same behavior. And there was no way to test on standard because there were no standard developer edition until now. So happy for that. It's
how could that have been hard to solve?
Thank you. You're asking the same question that about 10,000 SQL Server specialists have done for the last 30 years.
We want a cheaper product for free.
That's
not
probably
the expensive
why.
One.
No, yeah. I mean, we were coming up with ideas like, well, just give us settings to turn on and turn off enterprise features in the optimizer, for instance. Microsoft said crickets. But now we have it. That's really, really cool. Also really, really cool, this is going to open up both a can of worms and a lot of really interesting use cases. If you just take this vector and keep going with it. See what I did there?
Well done.
You now have native support for Delta, CSV, and Parquet. So using the OpenRowSet function, I can essentially just query a file in the file system. Previously, I could use, I know for a fact that you could use Parquet and CSV, but you had to run through the Polybase engine, which was a bit of a pain in the posterior, and it was slow. You don't need Polybase anymore, and now you can read Delta. And Delta is what all the cool kids use. Everything in Fabric is Delta. So now you can pretty much read your Delta tables straight into SQL Server. That opens up a bunch of really interesting use cases. And also, if you turn the whole thing on its head, what will you be able to do in Fabric SQL when it turns into 2025, because suddenly you don't have to put stuff into the database in the same way. You might be able to read it in situ and so on and so forth. So there are some interesting possibilities coming out that way. And the last thing that I want to mention, because again, we're running out of time, who would have known, we got some really cool love for old databases. We can, and we've been able to mirror data from a SQL Server, a modern SQL Server, Azure SQL Server, for instance, into Fabric. It's literally just a few clicks and all your SQL Server data lands in Fabric in the one lake as Delta tables, and you can just query them to your heart's content. And sometimes it actually works too. There are some interesting bugs, and when it breaks, it's not fun. But we didn't have the ability to do this with on-prem data sources, which is a slam dunk opportunity to bring stuff from your on-prem world without having to just bring all of it in. Yeah. Now we can do so. And they didn't just say, yes, you can do this for 2025, which you absolutely can, and that's faster. But you can do it for 2022, 2019, 2017, and 2016 as well.
Wow.
Yes. And 2016 was some time ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So having that capability unlocks a lot of migration paths, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So definitely. Really excited about those things. And SQL Server does not get the attention it deserves. It absolutely deserves more. But just about everybody talks about Fabric until the cows come home. So, yeah.
Yeah. Can I just mention one quick 30-second thing? I promise it won't be more than 30 seconds.
I'm timing it.
We are getting Microsoft Entra Agent IDs. I think this is the most exciting of all the announcements. All the agents will now be getting a unique Entra ID. So you can start to control the agents and the access and where are they used from and all of these things on a really granular level. And that also probably will help a lot in terms of DLP, a lot of those things, because that's also a huge announcement, all the DLP stuff for agents and Copilot and whatever. But the Microsoft Entra Agent ID is now in preview. It will start with the first party sources like Copilot Studio and Azure AI Foundry. But we are now getting an identity per agent that we can start to control and audit.
That's super.
I was just about to say and audit.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, that is huge and well worth the much more than 30 seconds that you just took.
It was
That's fine,
that.
Simon, because that was a good one.
Yes.
Thank you. But now we're out of time.
Yes.
And over time, as always. But it was great speaking to you again. It was great seeing you. And we hope that everyone that was listening to you enjoyed this second episode from Microsoft Build. And we'll probably revisit a lot of the things that we have talked about and much more in upcoming episodes.
Indeed.
But for now, thank you so much for watching. Listening, have a great rest of your week and take care. Bye-bye.
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 Thank you for listening to this episode of Native in Tech. Native in Tech is a weekly technology podcast hosted by Alexander Arvidsson, Simon Binder, and Heini Ilmarinen. If you have any feedback, questions, or would like to be part of an episode, please reach out to us on social media or via email at podcast@nativeintech.com.